Gin's all-time radio. We have the cracker of a show for you tonight, gals and gents. Wash your black heads, sniff some borax, and enjoy this episode of X-1 entitled Honeymoon in Hell.
Countdown for blast off. X-minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X-minus 1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents X-1. Tonight, the time is the late 1960s. The place, Washington, D.C. The story, Honeymoon in Hell.
My name is Carmody. I'm a grade one cybernetics man at Western Alliance headquarters in the Pentagon. Used to be a rocket pilot, but they retired me at 27 after I made the third successful flight to the moon. As a grade one cybernetics operator, I get to work with Junior. Let me tell you about Junior. He was built in 1962, and he's the world's finest electronic brain, with the possible exception of Ivan, the Eastern Alliance brain, which was built on stolen plans and modeled after Junior. There are only four men in the country permitted in the same room with Junior because the data we feed him is so secret. One of those four is the president of the Western Alliance. The other three are myself, Charlie Mazur, and the chief.
Ray?
Oh, yes, chief.
Have you got Junior running a problem?
Well, I just fed him the hourly data for probability of H-bomb war with the Eastern Alliance. Yeah, he's ready. Hold it.
According to the data just received, the probability of a hot war between the Western and the Eastern Alliance is 99.930 in favor of such a war breaking out within the next month.
Doesn't sound good, Chief.
Yeah. Well, I'll scramble the data and send it to the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Meanwhile, here's a priority C civilian problem to run off.
Well, what's this stuff?
Well, it seems on September 17th, a statistician in the birth record department of New York City noticed that out of 813 births reported that day, 657 had been girls and only 156 had been boys.
Well, that sounds impossible.
Well, that's what this statistician thought. So they phoned some other cities, and the same trend is being shown, not only in other American cities, but in Western Europe.
Sunspots, maybe?
That's for Junior to figure out. He's the brain here.
Okay, I'll feed him.
Give me the results on the intercom. I'll be in my office.
Right. I didn't really pay much attention to the problem at the time. As a grade one operative, I was more interested in asking Junior questions on security, ballistics, missiles, rocketry, and so on. The Eastern Alliance would undoubtedly have traded three puppet governments and the tomb of Lenin to have an agent as a grade one operative. But I took the birth statistics and fed them in and waited. Junior, incidentally, responds to vocal stimuli. Speaks 12 languages. Got the answer, Junior?
I have.
Okay.
The present statistics, if the trend is projected for another day, indicate a definite dangerous imbalance. If the trend is irreversible, unless new methods of reproduction are developed, the population of the United States and Western Europe will die out in 1.5 generations.
Well, it wasn't long before the newspapers got the story and kicked it around. People in governments really started to worry now. Biologists and laboratories made it their number one project. On September 29th, only 41 boys were born in the entire United States. During the month of October, in spite of all the work going on, not a single male child was born anywhere in the world, with the exception of one in Outer Mongolia and one in Alaska. November drew another blank. I was working 18 hours a day, feeding every available scrap of data to Junior.
Data insufficient for answer to your question.
Well, here's the latest. A new analysis of chromosome structure indicates the presence of an additional electron in the orbit of the Y atoms for carbon chain X. Now try again. The question is, what is causing the lack of male birth?
Anything new, Ray?
No, not yet. Hold it.
Data insufficient.
Well, that's it. We've fed Junior every scrap of information that every physicist, geneticist, chemist, and biologist in this half of the world knows, and all he does is say data insufficient.
Yeah, well, the operator who had him last night didn't do any better.
Any more information on the Eastern Alliance? Have they made any progress?
No, but at least the talk of a hot war is dying down.
Well, they're still working on a space station, aren't they?
Oh, yes, we're both going ahead with that. But, well, this seems to be a common problem now. You know, in spite of hydrogen bombs and ICBMs, people don't really expect the whole race to die out from a war. But the complete lack of male children, now that's something that every family can understand.
Has anybody thought of the possibility of some kind of radiation from outer space that's damaging the chromosomes, something our instruments can't detect?
Everybody's thought of it. Nobody's proved anything. Well, keep trying, Junior. Maybe he'll come up with something.
Okay. Junior. I'm ashamed of you. Answer me.
Information recorded.
Look, you're a whiz on rocket fuels and space orbits, but when it comes to women, you're a total bust, just like me. I don't understand them and never will.
Information recorded.
Now, you've convinced us that if we use the H-bombs in total war, both sides will lose, and we know that your counterpart in Moscow University has given the same information to the Eastern Alliance. That you can figure out. But women... You can't have genetics without women, right?
No.
Well, you know that much. What about that blonde at the party last night, huh? What about her?
The question is inadequately worded. Please clarify.
Should I see her again?
No.
What? You haven't even got any data on her. Why shouldn't I see her again? Answer, please.
Because tomorrow you are going to be married.
Jumped out of my chair. Junior had gone stark, raving mad. Besides, Junior never made predictions unless he had some definite data. There wasn't a woman on earth I had the slightest interest in marrying. I was a confirmed bachelor. So, unless somebody else had been feeding phony data into Junior, which was almost impossible since he already had enough data to check any flaw, well, I figured he'd blown a transistor. Come in. Oh, Chief, I was just going to tell you... Oh.
Ray Carmody? This is the president of the Western Alliance, Captain Carmody, Mr. President.
Glad to meet you, Captain.
Oh, I'm very honored, sir.
The president came here specifically to talk to you, Ray.
To me?
Captain Carmody, you have been chosen to have the opportunity to volunteer for a mission of extreme importance. Now, there's much danger, but not as much as on your previous trip to the moon.
Previous trip, sir? And this involves another?
The flight to the moon, Captain, will be the least important part of your mission. What's at stake here is the survival of the human race. Chief, perhaps you'd better explain the rest.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know the problem, Ray. Last night when Mitchell was on, we fed Junior some new data, and we asked some new questions. For example, we asked if the lack of male birth could be due to some extraterrestrial enemies of man.
Well, Martians?
Possibly. We established that it's possible that Martians have landed somewhere on Earth and set up radiation that causes all children to be females.
Junior said it was possible?
Definitely. So we asked him the next question. How could we correct such a situation?
Mm-hmm. What'd he say?
Junior suggested that a married couple spend a honeymoon on the moon and see if circumstances are different.
Oh, I see. You want me to pilot them there?
Well, not exactly, Captain.
Oh, good grief. You mean you want me to... Well, Junior wasn't crazy after all.
You asked Junior?
He said I was getting married, but... Well, how'd he know it was me they'd pick?
He was asked the qualifications for the bridegroom. He recommended a rocket pilot who had already made the trip successfully.
Well, there are four other pilots who've made that trip.
You're the only single one. And since the woman must be a qualified pilot also, and none of the wives are pilots, well,
I assume I'm going to be married before we leave.
Naturally.
Oh. And, just how long do we stay on the moon?
Until a child is conceived.
Brother.
Well, Captain, do you volunteer?
I suppose so. Well, wait a minute. Who's the other pilot? I mean, the girl.
She was flown in by fast rocket an hour ago and is waiting in Chief Reba's office. Now, shall we go?
There were some officials there, and a justice, and my bride. She was small, dark, slender, and very attractive. I was so busy looking at the way she filled out her uniform in just the right places that I almost overlooked the fact that she was dressed like an Eastern Alliance pilot.
Captain Ray Carmody, may I present Lieutenant Anya Borisovna?
You mean this is... an enemy pilot?
Pleased to meet you, Captain.
Yes, I'm pleased to meet you. Mr. President, I...
Captain, this marriage is being done on an international basis for important diplomatic reasons. Both alliances have been advised by their cybernetic machine that the experiment, if it is to benefit humanity, must bring all the major powers together. Miss Borisovna is 24, an experienced rocket pilot like yourself, and quite attractive, if I do say so myself.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Now, if you're both ready, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court will perform the ceremony.
Well, there's just one thing, Mr. President. Miss Borisovna, would you marry me?
Yes. And you may call me Anya.
Okay. Mr. President, we're ready. I didn't even get a chance to kiss the bride. We were rushed over to the labs for a pre-flight physical. Then the chief took me aside for a private pre-flight briefing.
Congratulations, Ray. Sit down.
Thank you.
Now, 0 hours at 10 o'clock.
Only half an hour?
We've known about this for several weeks now, Ray. Ship is ready. We've already fired 11 supply rockets and observed that they landed on the moon near where you're supposed to put down. One of them contains a heat-proof, airtight, collapsible shelter where you'll live.
Uh-huh. Oh, what's the ship like?
R-26, much better than the R-24 that you flew there. Last time, Ray, you took 4.5 Gs for 7 minutes. This time you'll get by with 3 Gs and have 12 minutes to accelerate to Brenchless. Now, you'll have enough fuel for the trip there. One of the supply rockets has your return fuel. Oh, yes. We put in a case of scotch and a case of vodka, just as an icebreaker.
Before we go, Chief, what would you have done if I'd turned this job down?
The cybernetics machine predicted that you wouldn't. Besides, we could have had 100 volunteers an hour after seeing Anya Borisovna. That gal is moonbait.
Careful. You're speaking of my wife.
Tower to R-26. Are you both strapped in?
Anya, you strapped into the webbing?
Yes.
Okay, Chief.
The time is X minus 15. I have a message from the President. Quote, "The people of the world are watching. Don't fail them. I have messages from the Soviets, the Chinese, the British, the Indians, all wishing you well. You are the hope of mankind, and all mankind unites as it has never before united in giving you its blessings. We await your return anxiously." Unquote. X minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X minus 1. Blast off.
The sound that was beyond all sound struck us like a giant muffled hammer. It built up until we weighed 480 pounds pressed flat against the webbing. Sound and pressure went on and on interminably. Then we reached Brenchless, free of the pull of Earth. I blacked out. When I came to, a lovely face was bent over mine, two dark eyes smiling at me.
Are you all right, Ray?
Oh, yeah. Are we weightless?
Yes. I shut off the fuel. We won't need it until we land.
Oh, thanks.
If you would teach me, I could help you land the ship. Oh, I've never been to the moon.
Well, sure. Just slide over here to the control panel.
All right. Like this?
Oh, that's fine. Mm. We've got about 4 hours Earth time to get acquainted.
Have you known many women?
A few. Have you had any boyfriends?
One or two.
Hmm. Well, I was never really serious about anybody.
Oh!
You, have a family?
Yes. In Magnitogorsk.
Oh. I'm from Brooklyn.
How long have you been a rocket pilot?
Oh, since I was 18. I'm 27.
I'm 24. I learned rockets when I was 18 also.
Oh. Well, we better concentrate on the ship just now. Later on, we can talk about ourselves more. Meanwhile, though, I hope you're not sorry. I mean, about this business. I guess it isn't very romantic.
I'm not sorry.
We made a good landing. It didn't knock either of us unconscious. Then we got into our spacesuits and got out of the rocket. Some of the supply rockets were lying within a quarter mile. There were 6 eastern rockets and 3 westerns. About 800 yards away, though, there was a big supply rocket we couldn't identify. It looked different from the others, and neither of us could identify it as an eastern or western design we were familiar with. I pointed to it, and we headed there. You recognize that supply rocket?
No, I was not briefed on anybody's standard cylinder shape.
Well, it must be something the chiefs of staff sent up as a surprise for us. I figured about 50 feet long, but you can't see the rocket tubes.
It might be a payload from a stepped rocket assembly.
Uh-huh. Well, there's a door on the side anyway, you see? The top of that ramp.
Oh, yes. Maybe we ought to observe it a while before we go in.
Oh, nonsense. Come on.
Ray!
Yes?
Ray, I'm frightened. There's something wrong with it.
Only one way to find out, Anya. Let's go. Well, there's some kind of lock on this door. Let's see if it opens. Wow. That was easy.
It's lighted inside.
Mm-hmm. Come on. Maybe they sent us a surprise cottage for the honeymoon. Special delivery to the moon.
This doesn't look like anything designed for humans to live in. Hey! The door's closed behind us.
Try the lock.
No, it's no use.
Here, let me try. Ooh, holy smoke, I can't get it open. Do you have a gun?
No, I have no weapons.
They would be useless anyway.
Oh, look.
Good grief. They look like blobs of flesh with arms and legs.
About 3 feet. Oh.
Don't make any sudden moves. That's some kind of weapon he's carrying.
Precisely, Captain Carmody.
Who are you? How do you know my name?
My people and I are inhabitants of another galaxy.
Extraterrestrial?
Precisely. As for how we know your name and your language, we have been studying you since you first achieved space travel. We have intercepted your radio communications, for example.
Have you been responsible for the lack of male birth?
We have been beaming an ultrasonic wave toward your planet.
What are you planning to do?
For the moment, we will keep you aboard our ship and study you. You may remove your helmets, incidentally. We have provided an oxygen atmosphere.
Can we risk it?
Well, if he wants to kill us, there are easier ways. Here, help me get it off. Well, it breathes pretty good. Keep your helmet with you.
You may make yourselves comfortable. We will bring you food and liquid from your supply rockets. Do not attempt to escape, please. It could be most unpleasant.
The next few days were like a nightmare. The blobs left us to ourselves except to feed us. Of course, it had its funny side, too. The creatures knew we needed liquid, but they couldn't distinguish between water and whiskey. For the first 2 days, we had nothing but whiskey to drink. For obvious reasons, I don't remember much about it, but we did begin to sing to each other. We also got to know and like each other. I got to learn some Eastern songs. On the third day, the jugs were water jugs, and we sobered up. Oh, what a hangover.
You were singing magnificently.
Oh, well, you weren't so bad yourself. How long was I asleep?
About 8 hours. Ray, while you were passed out, I discovered how we can escape.
What?
I've been studying the blobs. They seem to have a 5-hour sleep period when there is no sound in the ship. I've tried banging on the wall with my helmet during that period, but apparently they're almost completely unconscious during our...
Mm-hmm. 5 hours sleep. That means a planet with approximately a 20-hour rotation. The Joint Chiefs will want to know that if we get back.
And more important, we are much stronger physically than they are. I can actually bend the metal of the door lock.
Well, now, what are we waiting for? Let's put on our helmets and get out of here. Are they in the sleep period?
Yes, for about 3 hours. Ray, do you think we can risk it?
We don't have much choice. I'll go ahead. If we get out of this ship, you run for our rocket and start to refuel. I'll keep an eye on the blobs.
All right. All right, but Ray, oh, please be careful.
Don't worry. Before you put on your space helmet...
Yes?
You realize I've never even kissed the bride?
Yes. Oh, Ray.
Good luck, Mrs. Carmody. By the time I reached the ship, Anya had the rockets refueled. I jacked up the tail fins and we headed for space. When I checked our screen to see if the blobs were after us, we detected their ship heading toward the outer galaxies away from Earth. The rest was easy. In less than 24 hours, I was in the office of the president of the Western Alliance making a full report. The Eastern Ambassador was there, along with the chief.
Captain, this story is incredible.
Well, I'll be glad to submit to a lie detector, Mr. President.
There's one on its way. Our embassy is questioning Miss Borisovna right now to see if her story is similar.
Are you positive they were extraterrestrials? I mean, couldn't they have been, well, Easterners?
If Easterners are 3 feet tall, without bones, and look like little green blobs of protoplasm...
Yes. It's for you, Ambassador Carthage.
Thank you. Yes. 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 Our woman tells the same story under scopolamine. It must be the truth.
Obviously, they went back for reinforcements or further orders. If and when they get back, we've got to be ready for them.
My government stands ready to cooperate fully.
Excellent. We'll have to build a joint space station, get to the moon and fortify it jointly. If we pool all scientific knowledge, military data, we may be able to do it.
Our propaganda ministry has already received orders to put everything into reverse gear.
Comedy, I don't know how the world can ever thank you and Miss Borisovna. You not only averted a suicidal war between the East and West... You've also managed to draw us together in a joint effort where international power politics must be a thing of the past.
Well, sir, I have a request to make.
Anything, my boy. By the way, your wife is on her way over.
I'd like to get back to Junior to ask him a personal question before I see her again, if you don't mind.
Well, that's rather odd, but I suppose if it's what you wish. Chief, would you let Captain Carmody operate the cybernetics machine alone for a few moments?
Right this way, Ray, boy.
I waited until I was alone with a big cybernetics machine. One green dial glowed malevolently as if the instrument was aware of my presence. I opened the input channel and spoke. Hello, Junior. This is your old friend Ray. Give an appropriate answer.
Hello, Ray.
Now then, you remember Miss Borisovna, the girl who was selected for me to marry. Item one, she's going to rejoin me in a short while. Item two... I've fallen in love with her. Item three, before we actually live together as man and wife, I want to know something. Question. Does she love me?
Yes.
Oh, that's my boy. Now then, just one more item before I say so long and take a honeymoon. Tell me, Junior, why do I have a hunch that those blobs from outer space will never be back? Answer, please.
Because what you call a hunch comes from your own unconscious mind. Your unconscious mind knows that the extraterrestrials do not, and never did, exist.
What?
Do you wish the answer repeated?
I wish you to tell me why I saw them, why Anya saw them.
Neither of you saw them.
Amplify that answer, Junior, or I'll smash every tube in your memory bank.
Since I am an AC-7 cybernetics machine, I have no circuit reactor for threats of destruction of my tubes. The answer to your question is as follows. The memory of extraterrestrials is due to post-hypnotic suggestion.
You mean I was hypnotized to find those blobs on the moon?
Correct.
And just who hypnotized me?
I did. I hypnotized you.
Oh. And Anya?
A similar AC-7 cybernetics machine located at the University of Moscow.
Would you explain why?
Cybernetics machines are constructed to help humanity. A major war, the disastrous results of which I could accurately calculate, was inevitable unless forestalled. Calculation showed that the best way to avert that war was the creation of a common, mythical enemy. Therefore, I created a situation which led to your mission to the moon.
Well, wait a minute. You created the situation.
Yes.
Well, tell me how you did it. How did you prevent male babies from being conceived?
A special modification of radio carrier wave for station JVT here in Washington, D.C. The only 24-hour-a-day radio station in the United States. The modification is not detectable by any instrument known to man at present.
Well, how could you do that? You can't leave here.
1 year ago, you yourself fed me a problem. The design of a new cathode tube for radio station JVT. I modified the tube to send out a wave that would prevent male children from being conceived.
So all we have to do is eliminate that tube.
It will not be necessary. The tube was designed to burn out exactly 15 minutes ago.
And the same thing happened in the Eastern Alliance?
Precisely. Two properly constructed machines will always arrive at the same answer to the same problem.
Oh, Junior, I gotta hand it to you. But why let me in on it?
It is to the interests of humanity to know the truth. It is to your own interests. And you will tell no one because of the type of individual you are. Mankind will work together now to reach the stars.
One last question, Junior. If Anya and I were just hypnotized to think all of that was happening up on the moon, what really did happen up there? I waited a while, but Junior was silent. It's the first time he ever pulled anything like that. However, I'll swear that I saw that green eye of his wink at me.
You have just heard X-1 presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features Butterfly 9 by Donald Keith. The story of Jeff, who needed a job, and a man with a job to offer. One where giant economy-sized trouble had labels like fake make, bumsy, and peakage. Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you Honeymoon in Hell, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by Frederick Brown and adapted for radio by George Lefferts. Featured in the cast were William Redfield, Vilma Kurer, Wendell Holmes, Charles Penman, Leon Janney, Roger DeCoven, and Jack Grimes. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production.
To keep the fight against heart disease moving steadily forward, you're urged to support your heart fund. Send a generous contribution to your local heart association or to heart care of your local post office. When you help your heart fund, you help your heart. Hear the latest up-to-the-second news with Frank Blair, weekday mornings on most of these stations.
I appreciate properly presented napkins at a restaurant. If you don't, then you have mental issues. Welcome back to Ricky Gin's All-Time Radio. Now enjoy this episode of Dragnet entitled Police Academy.
Here's another in NBC's great parade of new shows.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
NBC brings you Dragnet.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned to robbery detail. An armed gang of blitz bandits has started to work in your city. Their pace is fast, 4 and 5 robberies each night. The criminals are not amateurs. They're well armed, dangerous. Your job, get them.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime, investigated and solved by the men who unrelentingly stand watch on the security of your home, your family, and your life. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Thursday, October 23rd. It was windy in Los Angeles. We were working a day watch out of robbery. My partner's Ben Romero. The boss is Ed Backstrand, chief of detectives. My name's Friday. I was on my way back from the statistician's office, and it was 11:42 a.m. when I got to room 27A. Robbery detail.
How'd it work out, Joe? Any good prospect?
Well, I don't know how good they are, but I got a handful.
How many did you get?
Well, let me see. 15, 18, 22. Ethel down in the stats office ran them on the IBM for me. There they are.
Let's see.
It's a gang of 3 men working on foot. Blitz robberies. They only take cash. M.O. is tie-ups. Work from 8 to 10 at night. One of the gang's tall, the other two short.
And these are the men the machine sorted out?
Under that heading, yeah. If our information's wrong, then so's the machine.
Got a good bunch of candidates here. Descriptions match up with what we got.
They seem to. Check the names on that list, Ben. Some of the smartest thieves in the country.
Yeah. Tommy Willis, Ray Greppa, Kemp Satelli, Manny Roberts, George Cross, Mario Koski. Reads like June graduation at San Quentin.
Yeah, George Cross and Tommy Willis are in town, we know that.
And Koski, he's around a couple of weeks ago.
And what about the rest? It's a big field.
Have to check them out, I guess. Might as well start at the beginning.
Did you go through the overnight reports yet?
Yeah, no restaurants, no liquor stores. That makes 5 days the gang's laid off.
Well, they can afford to, can't they? 18 robberies in 24 days, that's a pretty good haul.
This stop-and-go strategy of theirs, Joe, it's got me.
Yeah, they work hard for a week in one area and then they lay low. If they just keep going, we might have a better try at them.
Hey, Joe.
Yeah, Chandler.
Fell out here to see you, Joe. Name's Decker.
Decker. Henry Decker?
Didn't say. Want to see him?
Yeah, send him in.
Right. All right, Mr. Decker. This way.
How are you, Joe? You're looking good.
Well, Hank Decker. How are you?
I'm fine.
So, what are you waiting for? Applause? Come on in and shut the door. Hank, this is my partner, Ben Romero. Ben, Hank Decker.
Hi, Hank.
Hi, Ben.
Hank and I are in service together.
Yeah, I just dropped in for a visit, Joe. Are you busy?
No more than usual. Sit down.
Thanks. I remembered you telling me you were on the PD, so I figured I'd drop around and get an inside track.
How do you mean?
I just filed with Civil Service to take the exam next month. Figure I'd like to work at being a cop.
He shell-shocked, Joe.
Great pep talk you boys hand out.
You sure you want to be a cop?
Look, I'm 30 years old, Joe. I'm married, high school education, about a year of junior college.
What's your wife think?
She's not sold. Well, that's why I dropped in. How about coming out to the house for dinner tonight?
You want me to sell her?
Just talk to her. 7 okay?
Yeah, 7's okay.
I'm glad to have met you, Ben.
Same here, Decker. See you again.
Bye. Bye, Joe.
See you tonight, Hank. Well, what do you think, Ben?
Ought to make a good cop.
We had a list of 22 possible suspects. By 5 o'clock, Ben and I had checked out 2 of them who might possibly have had a hand in the blitz robberies of the 18 liquor stores and restaurants in the past 24 days. Number one man was Thomas Willis, Caucasian, age 29, 5 feet 11 inches, 175 pounds, dark hair, blue eyes. Number two man was Mario Koski, Caucasian, 5 feet 6 inches, 170 pounds, dark hair, dark eyes, large scar under his chin, running across his throat, up to and behind his left ear. According to our informants, and after questioning some of their associates, either Willis or Kosky or both could have taken part in the Blitz holdups. We showed their mugs to the victims, but none of them could give us definite assurance that either Willis or Kosky were in the holdup gang. At 7 that night, I went out to Hank Decker's house for supper, met his wife, Linda, his 4-year-old twin boys. We talked about the Army, played with the kids for a while. Before we sat down to eat, we put the boys in bed. Hank was in the kitchen carving the roast. His wife closed the door to the kids' room, and we started downstairs for the kitchen.
What do you think of our two atom bombs?
Yeah, they're fine kids, Ms. Decker. Hank told me that you were worried about him wanting to join the force.
I was 12 years old when my father was shot down. He was a policeman in Des Moines. He was only 37 when he died. I wouldn't know what to do if anything like that happened to Hank.
What do you want me to say?
But does Hank really want it? Can't you talk him out of it?
You're his wife. Can you? No, I think it's his choice, Miss Decker. He's going to have to make up his own mind.
I'm sorry. If it's what Hank wants, I guess I worry too much.
A lot of women marry cops. They have, and they will, and they all worry. Hank will be all right.
Will you guarantee it, Joe?
During the next month, I heard from Hank Decker only once. He was studying hard. During the same month, Ben and I were working hard, trying to find some kind of a concrete lead to break the Blitz gang. There had been no subsequent holdups which seemed to tie in directly with the gang or its operations. From the list of possible suspects which Ben and I made up, 18 names had been eliminated for one reason or another. Either they were in jail at the time of the robberies, out of the Los Angeles area, or out of the state. But 4 names remained: George Cross, Tommy Willis, Mario Kosky, Julian Brock. During the latter part of the month, George Cross was booked on a minor charge, and we questioned him at that time. He showed no knowledge of the holdups. Nearly 2 months after the robberies were committed, Ben and I were still without a solution as to the whereabouts of the gang.
Never known a Blitz gang back this way before, Joe. Once they get wound up, they usually go until they're caught.
Yeah. Did you get out those telegram checks to the east yet?
Last night before I went home. Sent out all 3.
Willis, Kosky, and Brock. I'd like to find just one of them.
Chicago might have something. That's Kosky's old hangout. It's Willis, too.
Mm. What about Brock? He's from Kansas City, isn't he?
Yeah. I got a wire, too. Might have an answer from one of them tomorrow.
That's a slow job. We'll have to wait it out.
Guess so. No follow-ups from the victims we talked to.
I'll get it. Robbery Friday.
Oh, hiya, Joe. Hank Decker, congratulate me.
What for?
Just passed my written exam. Got the letter this morning. How about that?
That's fine. When do you take your physical?
Oh, not till the end of the month. Next week, I take the oral and agility tests. Then the physical. If I get by them, I'm in.
Well, you're going to have a full month at the police academy after the test. There's a lot of work, Hank.
Oh, it can't be any worse than these tests.
It's a tough 30 days out there on the hill. Law, court procedure, evidence, combat firing, target practice. You'll have to wade through all of them.
You ever going to have anything encouraging to say?
Yeah, when you graduate.
I won't count on it. How's the job going?
Slow. How's your wife feel now?
About taking the job?
Mm-hmm.
A little better. She said to say hello.
Okay. Keep us posted, huh?
I'll do that, Joe.
Right. Bye. Hank passed his written test.
Sure anxious.
Brandy, Romero, got a minute?
Yeah, Skipper. Come on, Joe.
You got something, Ed?
Yeah, those Blitz robberies you're handling. Not having much luck.
We were. Gang's disappeared. Not a trace of them so far.
They leave town?
Oh, we're not sure, Ed. We don't even have a good description. We're guessing most of the way.
What are your guesses? You've had a couple of months to make them.
12 of the holdup victims we talked to told us definitely that there were 3 men in the gang, 2 of them short, 1 of them tall. We've just been working from there.
All 3 of them have dark complexions. Started with 22 possibilities and got it weeded down to 4. No, wait a minute, 3.
Yeah. Tommy Willis, Mario Kosky, Julian Brock. Willis and Kosky are Eastern Hoods. Brock's from the Middle West.
And where are they now?
Haven't showed their faces around town. Checking some of the cities in the East. That's about all we got, Skipper.
Not much for 2 months' work. Thieves can't be that smart.
Right now they are.
We've sounded out every lead we had, Ed. We're doing our best.
Either of you ever hear of a man by the name of Al Mishikov?
No, I don't think so.
Chicago gunman in the old days, wasn't he, Ed?
That's right.
I thought he was doing time in Joliet.
Paroled last year. Got a tip he was spotted on East Broadway night before last.
You figure it might tie in with our job?
I don't know. Find out. If I remember right, Mishikov's brother used to be pretty friendly with Mario Kosky. I helped send both of them up 13 years ago. Same rap, robbery.
Was that all you heard, Ed? Somebody spotted Mishikov?
That's all. If you can track him down, you might get some kind of a lead. That's more than you got now.
That night and for the next two nights following, Ben and I had dinner downtown instead of going home, and then we spent the rest of the night covering the lower end of the city in search of Al Mishakoff. We got more than a dozen leads on where to find him from some of our informants, but none of the leads paid off. We kept missing him. No one knew where he was staying. No one knew, or no one would tell us.
Worst thing about this job, Joe, leg work.
You must be averaging 10 miles a night.
My feet say 20. Almost midnight.
Here's McCarthy's place. Let's try it.
Right.
Let's go down to the end of the bar, Ben.
Yeah.
Hiya, Ben. Good to see you come in. What's new?
Oh, not much, Bert. Meet my partner, Joe Friday.
How are you, Friday? What do you fellas have?
Looking for a guy, Bert. His name's Al Mishakoff, Chicago. You heard anything?
He was in here earlier tonight. Couple of guys with him.
Are you sure? What do you look like?
6 feet, about 45, I guess. Big build.
Sounds like him, all right, Joe. Is he staying in the neighborhood, Bert?
Down here? I don't think so. Most of those big-timers stay uptown someplace. You looking for Mishakoff?
I'd like to talk to him. How long ago was he in?
Oh, about 8 o'clock. Couple of guys with him. They were talking about driving out to the airport. Something about Las Vegas.
Uh-huh. There's an 840 plane for Vegas, isn't there, Ben?
I think so. 840, 850. I can't recall which.
Bert, do you remember the exact time they left?
Exactly. No. Say, there's one of the fellas that was with Mishakoff down there in the middle of the bar.
Which one, Bert?
There. One with a sandy hair, big chin. See him?
Yeah. Want to talk, Joe?
Come on.
And, Judge, you know what he said? He said when he was in Vegas last week...
Yeah. Pardon me.
Killing. Yeah, that's why...
Pardon me. I'd like to talk to you a minute.
Yeah, who are you?
Police, Sergeant Friday.
Oh, have a drink, Sergeant.
No, thanks. I said I wanted to talk to you.
Square John, huh? Wait a minute, George. Square John wants to talk to me.
Come on outside. We can talk better out there.
I ain't done nothing. What's the pitch? I got a right to know.
Let's go outside.
Maybe I don't want to go outside.
I think you better. Come on.
All right, all right. Quit shoving, you dumb cop, shoving people around. What are you trying to do anyhow?
All right, down this way.
Car's parked up the next alley, Joe.
Hey, look, what's this all about, huh? I got a right to know.
You were seen with Al Mishakoff tonight. Where is he?
Who?
Al Mishakoff. You want us to spell it?
I don't think you can spell your own name.
Nobody's asking you to play smart. Where's Mishakoff?
Out of town. What do you care?
Here's the car. All right, inside you.
Now, look, you got me wrong. I ain't done nothing.
Where's Mishakoff?
You and some other guy drove to the airport with him tonight. Let's have it.
I'm clear, I tell you. I just drove out with him, that's all.
Where'd Mishakoff go?
Vegas. Took the plane for Vegas.
When?
About 8:30, quarter to nine. What's up, anyway?
Who's the guy traveling with Mishakoff?
Nobody.
Who's the guy traveling with Mishakoff?
Koski. I just met him tonight.
Mario Koski, is that the guy?
Yeah, I'm leveling. I ain't done nothing.
Ben, get to a phone, call the office, contact Las Vegas police. Ask them to pick up Koski and Mishakoff. When we got back to the office, we questioned the man we had picked up for almost 2 hours. His name was John Delmar, an ex-convict. He'd been paroled from Folsom Prison 2 months before after serving 3.5 years for burglary. He said Mishakoff was looking for a man to work with him and Koski. He didn't specify the work. Delmar said he refused the offer, but they parted on friendly terms. He said Koski and Mishakoff told him that they were going to Las Vegas for a few days, then returned to Los Angeles. But when Ben and I checked back with the Las Vegas police the next morning, they reported that nobody answering the description of either Koski or Mishakoff was seen arriving or leaving the airport. We checked with the airlines and sent inquiries to law enforcement agencies throughout the entire area. No sign. 3 weeks went by. Still, no sign.
Nothing in the overnights, Joe. No, not a thing.
Oh, yeah, same here. Reno, Sacramento, San Francisco. Nobody's seen him.
He'll got to come out sometime. We can wait.
Yeah, we can wait. Gets on your nerves. Let's check with Backstrand. Maybe he's got a job for us in the meantime.
You're getting as eager as your friend Hank Decker, Joe. Incidentally, how'd things turn out for him?
He passed all his exams, putting in his month's training at the academy now. He should do all right.
Hiya.
Hiya, Mike. Skipper busy?
Not in his office. Won't be in till afternoon.
What's the matter?
He's got a lecture at the police academy this morning.
Thanks, Mike. Come on, Ben. Ben and I drove out to the police academy near Elysian Park. We went out to check with Ed Backstrand on the Blitz robberies, not to listen to his lecture. When we walked into the classroom, he was just finishing up, so we sat in the back of the room and listened. It was a pretty good speech.
Because of the alertness of the arresting officer, his talent for memorizing detail, and his knowledge of how a criminal acts under a given set of circumstances, the arrest was made. Well, that's about it, gentlemen. Thank you for your attention. Now, when I ran this speech over at home, my wife said it wasn't a very good talk, but at least it came out on time. Now it seems I'm 2 minutes short, so I guess I failed on both counts. If I may, I'd like to use the few minutes that are left to tell you what I think of being a cop after 24 years. For one reason or other, you men have chosen the career of a police officer. Well, let me tell you right now, without any qualifications, it's a thankless job. Maybe you can't see it now. Maybe you think I'm exaggerating. But when you graduate next week and get that uniform on, your whole lives are going to change. You're going to lose friends, a lot of them. They'll want parking tickets fixed, some other favors. You'll have to turn them down, so you'll be a heel, a fathead. When you're on the beach, you're going to meet the cream of society and the scum, the lowest. Sometimes you won't be able to tell the difference. Some of you will have to work with thugs, stupid gangsters, dope addicts, cheap women, all the human garbage you can find in a big city. You'll come home at night and take a shower to wash off the dirt, but you still won't feel clean. That's the job. When you buy a box of candy and bring it home for your anniversary, the neighbors will say you chiseled it. When you save up a few dollars and buy a new car or some furniture for the house, it's graft. People are going to want favors. They'll offer you things, a free beer or a new dress for your wife. If you take it, you're a chiseler. If you don't, you're a tough cop. Well, here's a piece of advice. Take nothing from anyone, no matter how good a friend he is. Pay for everything you get and don't ask favors. Treat everybody alike, no matter what they look like or what they believe in. You don't play favorites. There are going to be times when a few men in the department get out of line. The newspapers will play it up because it makes good reading, and the average John public will love it, because that's the only way he can pay you back for that traffic ticket you gave him. Being a good cop is a hard job, but it's a good one. Let me warn you just once more. It's one of the most thankless jobs on earth. That's all, gentlemen.
The following week, Hank Decker graduated from the police academy and hit the transfer list for a regular assignment. He drew a job of teaching combat firing and boxing at the academy. He didn't like it, so he put in a request for a transfer and waited. For the next 6 weeks, Ben and I waited, too, for some sign of the Blitz Bandits. There wasn't any. The only possible suspects, Mario Kosky and Al Mishakoff, had disappeared completely. We kept a close check on every possible avenue of information. Still, no sign. Ben and I were transferred to the night watch on robbery for a few weeks, and that gave Hank Decker a chance to drop in and visit with us a couple of hours when he went off duty at the academy. He was still as eager as ever.
Hi, Ben. Joel, anything new?
Hi, Hank. Nothing here. What about the academy?
Oh, big news.
What's up?
Getting a transfer starting next Monday. Gonna start on a beat.
Thought you were all tied up with that boys' club you started out there.
Oh, I was, but Hanson's gonna take over when I leave. The kids sure love it. Free swimming, the pool, boxing lessons. We teach them everything.
Where's your beat gonna be, huh?
Central, right in the downtown district. Might learn something, huh?
You'll learn a lot. You want to forget most of it.
Look, it's 7:15. Don't you ever go home for dinner, Hank?
Oh, getting a wife used to it. This new shift's gonna be night work, you know.
Wait till you're on it for a year, and then you tell us how you like it.
A year? I want to be in the detective bureau after a year.
Well, you're not even going to last a year if you don't get home to dinner. Your wife's called twice this week already. She calls me.
Okay, when did she call tonight?
She hasn't yet.
Oh, I guess I better head her off. Let me know if anything breaks, huh, Joe? I'd like to tag along.
Okay, Hank. Well, on your way.
Okay, good night.
So long.
Good night. Yeah. How eager can you get?
Were we like that when we started?
Not me. I never had that much energy at one time in my whole life. Hot shot, Joe.
I'll get it.
At 767 East Broadway, a liquor store, 211 and slugging. At 767 East Broadway, a liquor store, 211 and...
767 East Broadway, 211, liquor store.
Let's go.
East Broadway, King's Liquor Store. We pushed our way through the small crowd outside the door and into the shop. Two patrolmen in uniform were already interviewing the proprietor. He had two large gashes on his head just above the right temple. He was trembling and badly shaken, but he managed to give us a good description of the holdup men.
Yeah, I can tell you what they look like. Three of them. One short, one tall, husky. Another short, fat.
You remember what they were wearing?
Coats. All three, dark coats. One of the short men, he had a big scar here on the throat, like this. After the three men robbed the store, they slugged me and tied me up.
Turner, this man's hurt. You call an ambulance?
On the way, Sergeant.
That's fine. We have just one more question, Mr. King. Here's a handful of pictures. We'd like you to tell us if any one of these men were in the gang that held you up tonight.
Let me look.
There you are. Take your time.
No. No, not him. No. 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 Oh, this one. Here. He took the money from the register.
Would you look through the rest, please? Are there any more?
Let me see again. No. No. Oh, here. Another one. The fat one with the scar. This is him. I think he's the one that slugged me.
Thanks, Mr. King. Here's our card. We'll be contacting you later. Turner, will you and your partner take the crime report? We've got some checking to do.
Right, Sergeant.
Thanks. Come on, Ben.
Yeah. Kosky and Mishikov. He picked out both of them, Joe.
Yeah, he certainly did, didn't he?
Attention, all units. Attention, all units.
Wait a minute.
The southeast corner of Broadway and East 3rd, a liquor store and restaurant, 211, code 3. All units, the southeast corner of
Broadway.
Come on, Ben,
let's roll. When we got to the liquor store and restaurant at Broadway and East 3rd, Ben and I knew for certain that Kosky and Mishikov were back in the city and working hard. Their M.O. matched down to almost the smallest detail. We put a call through to communications and the entire central division was alerted. Then we called Chief Backstrand and told him the news. He assigned a special detail from the Metropolitan Unit to patrol the area until further notice. But at 9:23 p.m., before they pulled out of the police garage, the Blitz Bandits added two more liquor stores and one more restaurant to their list of victims. Early the next morning, Ben and I met with Chief Backstrand in his office.
You got a make on that third man yet?
We ran his description through R&I early this morning, Ed. Closest candidate's a guy by the name of Julian Brock. Done time here in New York.
Any tie-up with Kosky or Mishikov?
Mama Sheet says he knows Kosky pretty well.
And that's good enough. Now, how do you think you're going to get these thieves?
We've got the alert out, Chief. Special detail from Metropolitan Division's been briefed. Communications all set.
All right. Here's a tip for you. Tell them in if there's a hold-up call that only the car in the area of the hold-up will handle it. These thieves are no amateurs. Let me try some decoy trick. Tell the men to stay in the area they're assigned to until they receive a call. Jake?
We'll take care of it, Ed. You're going to be on hand tonight?
And when do you figure on starting?
We'll have the full detail out for 6:30.
Play it safe and start at 4. Why chance missing him?
At 3:30 that afternoon, we left the police garage with the special detail from Metropolitan Division and we started to cruise the central area. We weren't looking for any action the first few hours and we didn't get any. The 5 o'clock traffic in the downtown area was heavy as usual.
Hope that gang holds off till after 6. We couldn't get out of this traffic if our lives depended on it.
Well, we'd probably do better on foot if it wasn't for radio contact.
Control 4 to 80K. Control 4 to 80K, your location.
Get it, will you, Joe?
Yeah, wait till I get the mic. 80K to Control 4. 80K to Control 4. Our location on Spring Street between 2nd and 3rd.
80K, standby. 80K, call your office, code 2. Call your office, code 2, KMA
367. 80K to Control 4, Roger, KMA 367.
Yeah, now what do I do for a parking space?
You know, you're lucky. That guy up ahead there, he's pulling out.
Good, that hasn't happened to me in 6 months.
Okay, hold on, Ben. I'll be back in a minute.
Yeah.
Hall.
2511.
2511.
Robbery, Chandler.
This is Friday, Bill. You want us?
Yeah, I just met a Joe. Chief wants to talk to you. Hello, Friday.
Yeah, Ed.
Cruiser car just brought in a guy answering the description of Mario Kosky.
Yeah?
Get over here right away and question the guy. If it is Kosky, we can all go home early.
Ben and I went back to the office and questioned the man who gave his name as Conrad Larkin. He was Kosky's approximate height and weight, same color hair, same color eyes. The resemblance to Kosky's picture was evident.
We questioned him thoroughly about the Blitz robberies, and then we checked out his fingerprints. The coincidence was hard to overlook, but we were satisfied. The man was not Mario Kosky. There was a phone message on my desk to call Hank's wife. I called her, and then we checked with Chief Backstrand again and started for the police garage. It was 6:10.
Hey, Ben, Joe, wait a minute, will you?
Oh, hi, Hank. What's all the excitement?
I heard about those jobs last night, the Blitz gang. How about tagging along tonight?
What's the stir?
Hey, suit yourself, Hank. Plenty I do home for dinner.
I told the wife I'd eat out tonight.
You sure you're not due home for dinner?
No, not tonight, Joe. Does he have any luck yet?
Not so far, Hank. Maybe later on tonight.
Come on, here's the garage.
How close did you come to the gang last night?
Not close enough. Two steps ahead of us all the way.
They sure must work fast. Five jobs in a row.
All right, Hank, let's don't rub it in, huh? Hey, Ben, watch it, will you?
Yeah. Woman driver.
How about it, Joe? You think I can make the outfit?
You can talk to Ed Backstrand. He might get you a transfer after a while.
Yeah, I might try it. Joe, look across the street. There's a guy coming out of the bar.
Where?
In front of the bar. He's standing there. Guy in the dark coat, you see?
Yeah. Two other guys behind him.
Who is it?
I can't be sure. Ben, you better pull up.
Kosky looks just like his picture.
All right. Come on. All right, hold it, mister. We want to talk to you.
Run for it, Al Copper!
Watch it, Joe!
Hank, get down! Get down!
Two of them down, Ben.
Other than one up alley. Let's go.
Did they get Hank?
Yeah.
All right, hold it right here. All right, Kosky, throw out your gun and come out with your hands up. All right, let's return the fire. Come on.
He had his chance.
Yeah. Grab his gun. Let's get back to Hank. Did you get the guns from the other two?
Yeah, they're dead. Hank got them both.
All right, one side, please. Officer, did you call an ambulance?
Yeah, they're on their way.
Come on, Ben. One side, please. Will you let us through? Hank, how you doing?
That's a good job.
Ben, will you get the crowd black? Give him some air.
Would you just move back?
All right.
All right, easy, Hank. They'll be here in a minute. Hank? Hank.
How's it doing, Joe? Gone?
Yeah, come on.
What have you got, Joe?
Phone message from Hank's wife.
For you?
Yeah.
You returned the call?
Before we left the office.
Who was it?
She wanted me to remind Hank. He was due home for dinner at 7 o'clock.
The story you have just heard is true. Only the names were changed to protect the innocent.
You have just heard the 12th in a new series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice for Dragnet is furnished by the Los Angeles Police Department.
Tonight's program is dedicated to Patrolman James Frank Goggin of the Cleveland Police Department, who on the morning of January 13th, 1939, gave his life so that yours might be more secure.
Dragnet came to you from Los Angeles. If you enjoyed tonight's production of Dragnet, you'll want to listen to Richard Diamond, private detective, as played by the screen's romantic tough guy, Dick Powell, heard Saturday on most of these NBC stations. This is NBC, the national broadcasting company.
Thank you for listening to Ricky Jin's Old Time Radio. Join us again next week at the same time on the mighty KONR. Don't forget to play What Will Mrs. Thompson Say at LGAB.com. Now, stay tuned for the Sasquatch Report.